Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to today's episode of Bring Out Your Best Blog Talk Radio with Right Living. I'm Kate Holmquist.
And I'm Rachel as well.
And we're glad you joined us today to talk about some of the common relationship myths and misconceptions. Today in particular, we're focusing on relationship myth number one from Dr. Bob and Dr. Judith Wright's new book, Heart of the Fight. And that myth is, if I only had a relationship, I'd be happy. Now, I don't know about you, Rachel, but I can't imagine that I've ever said anything like that in words. But I know I've kind of, there are ways I've acted as if it's true.
Yeah, absolutely. My joke when I read that topic was, oh, yeah, well, that's true. That's a fact.
Right.
I do go around coaching people that that's not true, but there are definitely ways that I still feel that belief. It's still there.
Right. And I know for my part, I would find it pitiful if I were, like, actually looking at a couple and thinking, oh, if I only had that, I'd be happy. Like, I don't often think, I don't even let myself think of myself as unhappy, or let myself think that a magical solution like that would be, you know, valid. I feel like I've evolved beyond that, but I know that way back in the background programming of my brain, that is so there that, you know, that would solve everything. And I know there are ways I act when I get in a relationship that tell me that I absolutely believe it, that all of a sudden I'm on cloud nine. And, you know, there's a truth to it, which is that I think I experience, if I'm in a relationship with someone, then I'm okay to someone. You know, there's confirmation out there that I'm, like, smart enough, beautiful enough, attractive enough, you know, engaging enough, you know, to be for somebody. So there's, like, some kind of, there's something that happens. I know that's there.
Yeah.
But what we know from the research is that that something, whatever it is for you, whatever your version is that may differ from mine, it's a short-lived something.
Yeah.
So I think we want to kind of deal with that today. Hear some questions from people who are in the early stages, either of relationship or not relationship, and just talk about the real deal, what comes and goes as we're starting or stopping or dealing with the newness of relationships.
Yeah, I think that's great. And this comes up for me every time I'm thinking, you know, what do I want for my next year? What are my goals? What do I want to be different? And every time there's this thought that says, you know, I'd like to be in a relationship this year.
Yeah.
But then there's the trap of this myth, you know, that if I'm in a relationship, then things will be better and I'll be happy. Not to say I'm not happy, but there's that. So there's, to me, there's this piece about holding the tension of, yes, it's okay to want it.
Totally.
It's okay to yearn to love and be loved for connection. And, you know, that myth that things will just be better if I'm in a relationship is actually not true. So it's the tension of those two things for me.
Right. I agree.
Yeah.
Good. Well, let's hear more. We've got a question from an online listener who says, if self-validated intimacy and self-assured happiness is the goal, then how should I think about the role of a partner? Ooh, I get it. Kind of like, why bother? If my happiness is an inside job, if I'm whole and complete, as we say in some of our trainings, and it's really my job to monitor and generate my own happiness, then why bother with all that relationship stuff, all that potential hurt?
And self-validated intimacy is really, really this idea. It's a psychologist Schnarch's idea, really about you know, what is it for me to be willing to be, you know, open, even if I might get hurt, and able to really validate and affirm myself there. So it's this idea, you know, I want you to affirm me. I want you to agree with me. I want you to be there for me, but I'm not going to stop being who I am if I don't trust you. You know, I'm going to be an open book, and, you know, it's great if you're what I want you to be, or if you reflect me back how I want you to, but really the point is I want you to know me, and I have to risk in order to do that.
Right.
So I think this is, I think it's a beautiful concept, and I think this is a beautiful question.
Yeah, so I think what the question is saying and it's asking is, like, the job of my partner is not to complete me, to affirm me, to whatever. And I think as we think about relationships broadly here at the Wright Foundation, that's definitely the terms we look at. It's like the purpose of a relationship is to learn and grow. And I've often thought of it in these terms, like why are there 6 billion people in the world if I'm not meant to somehow be bumping up against them and changing as a result of my interactions with them? I don't learn and grow in a vacuum. I learn and grow by encountering other people, dealing with the emotions that that brings up, and that's how I really know who I am and what I believe in by being with other people.
It's really the opposite of soulmates in a lot of ways. It's like, it's not like here I am this shape and here's another person and we're looking to meet up and match perfectly.
Completely.
So that I'm completed.
Right.
It's like this picture of like we're all just bumping and there are many people, many options and a lot to learn.
I actually hold it as more of a value in my relationships to have somebody that's going to crack my false self.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not interested in a partner who doesn't challenge me. I'm in this situation right now where it's like there's someone I've established that I'm compatible with in a lot of ways and not in some ways. And as we're figuring out what the relationship is, it's like I like this a lot more now that he's telling me where I'm full of crap.
Yeah.
And where I am hurting him. It's like the things he's pointing out to me really are things that I need to be working on. They're my dark side. They're things I haven't like brought to light in any other relationship in a while, let's say. Not never, but if it's just me in and of myself and it's true. I'm complete. My life is great. You know, there's nothing I need necessarily and I yearn to be with someone who's going to be, you know, who's going to bother to get to know me on that level, as you said, with the self-validated intimacy.
Yeah, and this idea of that false self, you know, the false self is the idea of myself I present to the world. It's you picture like sort of a perfect shell, the idea that I want people to see. On the one hand, you know, you might think that I would want people to, you know, interact with me at that level so that they see and reflect back at me what I want them to. But what we find is really that it gets old. It gets boring. It's not fulfilling and deeply satisfying. So what we're after is you know, sometimes I can't see my false self. I can't see what it is that I'm trying to reflect. But when we have that level of really deep, genuine contact with another person is oftentimes when they're, you know, when they're questioning us or when they're something they're doing is like it pokes in a way that's like that's a way I hadn't thought of this before. That's a way I hadn't seen myself before. So that's what we're after is, you know, rather than finding a kind of person where it matches perfectly and everything's comfortable, we're looking at, you know, as you were saying, Kate, the bumping up against each other.
Yeah.
So that we might both get a little bit bruised, but in the end, it's, you know, it's better and we know ourselves and each other better.
Right. I think the other piece to mention here is also from the realm of psychology, there's attachment theory.
Mm-hmm.
Murray Bowen and company have written on that. And from what I understand of it, he and they talk about attachment as what happens between a parent and a child, usually a mother if she's the primary caregiver, where the child knows that they can always kind of cling to mom's leg or, you know, the folds of her skirts, as they said it in the 50s, 60s, whenever attachment theory was gaining ground.
Yeah.
And I have experienced my, you know, romantic partnerships that way.
Yeah.
And that is, that's a possible goal of a partnership, is to create that secure base with someone as a place from which you can explore the world.
Yeah.
You know, that my relationship with a partner or significant other would give me confidence to say the things I'm afraid to say. You know, that we can go head-to-head on things and the world doesn't collapse and the relationship doesn't crumble, gives me greater strength and flexibility and just, like, confidence to, say, deal with situations at work where I'm trying to say things that I thought were unsayable. You know, it's like in the ideal, I think our, you know, romantic partners should be like a playground for how we engage with the world, where you should feel the most safe and at the same time we feel the most at risk. So it's a great like testing ground for, am I going to be who I know I am becoming, who I want to be in this relationship? And if I can do it here, I can probably do it pretty darn anywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a, you know, there's that bumping up that we're talking about, but there's also that sense of comfort. You know, I, like, for example, I don't, you know, for me, arguing, debating is a challenge. It's not something that's comfortable or I particularly enjoy. So there's a certain amount of that I do want in my relationships because it challenges me. On the other hand, I'm not going to end up in a relationship with a debater who just wants to debate, because that's not going to give me that attachment, that sense of
right.
a comfort. Maybe it would for some people.
It would have, based on my attachment schema.
Yeah.
I grew up as the child of a debate coach, so love meant you debate.
Right.
You know, that's
yeah.
how you care about people.
Absolutely.
If you debate a point. So.
Yeah, so I'm just wanting to clarify, bumping up against each other doesn't just mean arguing.
Right.
You know, bumping
right.
up really means getting to know each other on
right.
that deeper level. So for
right.
me, it's maybe like 10% arguing. that's about as much as I want right now, but it's enough to sort of shake me out of my,
yeah.
you know, my false self and still provide that attachment that I'm looking for.
Right. And there's a whole lot more to say about, you know, how much affirmation we need in a relationship
oh,
versus
yeah,
criticism.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, it's not to just say that we're trying to chip away, and that's the only purpose of a relationship. I think the only other thing I want to say on this is that just talking about the idea of who we want to become gets at the fact that we really have a different idea of happiness around here. You know, for some people, happiness means peace and quiet, and I'm fine as I am. Thank you very much. For us, happiness is, and the research supports this, the people who are happiest are people who know that they can change their life situation, people who know they can learn and grow and have opportunities and tools to do so. And so happiness doesn't just mean I'm completely comfortable with who I am, come join me in that and, you know, mesh with me that way in the soulmate way. Happiness means I am a person who's becoming, and I choose someone who will be with me in my becoming.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, our emotional curriculum on top of that, you know, says that we all experience hurt, fear, anger, sadness, and joy. And really, from our vantage point, it's not just the joy that's to
right.
be valued. You know, the seeking a happy life, you know, people say that it's thrown around a lot, but we don't want to say that happiness, one out of five moments where we're feeling happy, that's the only thing to be valued.
Right.
You know, I've experienced the value in sadness, hurt, fear,
totally.
Anger, all of
yep.
those emotions. So we really look towards more of a satisfying life, a fulfilling life, and really that includes sort of the whole realm of human experience.
Yeah.
And you know, joy is beautiful, but it's not everything.
That's great. Well said.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thanks to our online viewer for submitting that.
We've got another caller or another online question, actually. Our next question, next caller says, I'm feeling good about being single right now, but what happens when the single honeymoon is over?
The single honeymoon. I love it.
The single honeymoon. So I'm wondering whether this person was the one to end the relationship or the one to be ended. Sort of suspecting.
I don't think it matters.
Yeah.
I've just been through the ending it, being the one to end it,
yeah.
and there was a certain relief, and then there was a, oh God, I'm out there again.
Yeah,
I need to do this again.
Good point.
And you know, as much as I felt kind of initially like, okay, like all the possibilities are wide open again, and without any obligation, there was that sort of sinking feeling at a certain point of like, I really need to come to terms with, you know, what's the next step going to look like, what's really possible.
Well, I think this really tees up that balance that we've talked about before of kind of like the, you know, dating is a playground. Dating is so much to learn. You know, we go for being satisfied and enjoying our lives single, and holding that yearning for a relationship, for connection, to love and be loved that I was talking about earlier. So it is the tension of holding those two things at the same time. You know, just because I want a relationship, I yearn for a relationship, doesn't mean I yearn to be loved or connected, doesn't mean that, you know, something's wrong if I'm single.
Right. So we talked a little bit about how the honeymoon phase, whether it's in a phase of single and loving it or in a relationship and loving it, ends. And we can say that with certainty. You know, we look at the research of Daniel Gilbert, where he looks at lottery winners and paraplegics and asks the question, well, who do you think would be happier a year after their incident, someone who'd lost physical functionality or someone who'd won a bunch of money at, you know, from the lottery? And based on surveys, he basically said there was no discernible change in their level of happiness either a year or 18 months out. I don't have command of those facts 100%, but I believe it. You know, the phenomenon holds true to my experience.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Definitely. That, you know, that external change, either of being single again or being in a relationship again, doesn't produce the a long-term change in happiness. And they say with even newlyweds, they go back to their premarital level of happiness within about 18 months. So we can presume that the same thing happens with singlehood. And I like what you're saying about holding the tension, because I do think for my own sort of journey with dating and my own kind of like spiritual commitment, it feels like I need to be okay with the idea of being single before I'm really in the right space for a relationship.
Mm.
And I don't want to make it sound so formulaic or legalistic,
yeah,
like, oh, or secret-like, as if nobody's going to come into my life so long as I'm greedily grasping or, you know, feeling inadequate or something like that. But I feel like there's some kind of basic truth of, I'm probably going to go about my dating differently if I feel like I'm okay, you know, like I live a great life, and anyone who wants to come and join me in it is a lucky man, than if I feel like I got to get married, like, when's it coming, come on.
Yeah, totally. And for me, I think it's a constant process of working on that sense of okayness and strength of, you know, who I am. And I think, you know, to this question, it's like, you know, the single honeymoon, it being sort of similar to the, you know, the dating, the new relationship honeymoon. You know, I'm always a little bit wary of the sort of flutters
absolutely,
that kind of feeling. And not that I think, you know, not that I think they're bad either way, single or dating, but you know, I know that how I feel around relationships does tend to phase, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But I mean, to be able to sort of through all that be working on my strength of, you know, my core and my sense that I'm okay and my sense that I'm enjoying life is important for me.
Yeah. So the question was, what happens when the single honeymoon is over? I think the answer is, hopefully you will know it's coming.
Yeah.
You know, like one reason that we study developmental models around here is so that when these, you know, crises of one sort of magnitude or another in life happen, you know, when you find yourself down in the dumps over not being with someone, you can kind of look at, oh, this is just what happens, you know. So we talk about the hedonic treadmill that Daniel Gilbert describes, where we just have that, you know, happiness set point, so that when it happens, I can go, wow, here I am back at my happiness set point, and not have to go, oh my God, I've like failed again. I thought this singlehood was so great. I deluded myself, or, you know, it's you're just a human being. That's all. I mean, I think that's the thing to acknowledge, is that that this is normal, and to be in the question then of what are my yearnings, what did I want, why did this single life feel so great at the beginning?
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe it was that I had total freedom, maybe it was that I was having novelty and variety in the types of people I met, maybe it was in the types of things I went out and did or ways I took care of myself. There's always something to learn from that moment that might feel like total crisis, but actually is totally common to us all, and a useful point from which you can learn and grow.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I mean, isn't it that way with everything, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Career,
absolutely.
All over the place. We're up and down. And this goes back to those five core emotions, too. You know, if we only value the up, then we're kind of setting ourselves up for a lot of saying, like, my life is just bad right now. You know, how about you know, having children, how about retirement, all the ways life goes up and down. So I think it's so important to be able to value all the aspects of the range of experience. And that's where we get to, you know, the existential principle of aliveness and what is it to really appreciate being alive and the feelings we have, you know, without placing so much value, good or bad.
Yeah. Agreed. Well, thanks, single honeymooner, for writing in. We appreciate it.
Well, those are our callers for today. You know, I was going to bring up my own question, which is around the same sort of idea of
the other side of the coin.
The other side of the coin.
Let's hear it.
Yeah, it's like being in the, you know, I'm newly in a relationship and I'm in that honeymoon stage and I feel it. And for me, you know, as I said earlier, I'm always suspicious of the flutters. So feeling the flutters, you know, what's going on with me is like I feel them, I'm excited about them, And there's a part of me that's like, I know better.
Yes, absolutely. You're an enlightened flutterer.
Yeah, I'm an enlightened flutterer. No, but I know that's a temporary phase, that it doesn't last. And at the same time, don't want to be negative and just sort of like waiting and expecting for things to not feel as enjoyable as they do right now. So just the balance between those two.
Yeah. Well, again, I kind of look at this in terms of, you know, this is why we study the development of relationships,
mm-hmm.
the same way we, you know, study the development of human beings. It's like we have that innately, you know, we're wired with hormones, we're wired with our attachment schema from our childhood. We're wired to get the flutters when we start.
Yeah.
We're wired with these ways to bond us together, like biology, nature, evolution, whatever you believe, has designed us to like get in the same room together.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can sort of just like kind of, I feel like sometimes in my better moments, I can sort of delightfully step back and be like, oh, this is sort of hilarious that this
yeah.
is how humans are designed to bond with
yeah,
each other. But
yeah.
to know that it's meant to drive you to a different level of relationship. It's meant to, you know, keep you in contact with a person long enough to learn about their fitness as a partner or biologically speaking, like their ability to help you raise children
yeah.
successfully in the world and things like that. Or from our perspective, you know, to test out their values, their principles in relation to you.
Yeah, absolutely. To form enough of an attachment that you want to stick it through with that person in order
right.
to enough to learn about them and form something there.
Right. And one of the perspectives that Dr. Bob and Dr. Judith share in The Heart of the Fight talks about the fact that people think that they've fallen out of love if
mm-hmm.
all of a sudden the flutters are gone or the
mm-hmm.
initial spark of that chemical romance. And it's actually not true. It's just that love evolves over time, and the marriages that last evolve from chemical romance to companionate love, companionate
yeah.
marriages, if that's your tack, and then even further to what they call consummate marriages
mm-hmm.
Or consummate love. So it's just a different kind of thing, but I like that you're conscious about the fact that this is, you know, this is going to end, and you know this is a phase.
Yeah.
And I think the thing to do is ask what the phase is like meant for.
Yeah, yeah, no, I love that, and I think it's sort of to the end of just like acceptance of the phase and acceptance of
yeah.
where I am in it, because it's no fun to say, you know, I'm in this fun phase. And I'm concerned that it's
yeah.
going to end. Like just
and to be sort of worried, like
yeah,
holding on, when
exactly,
is it going to end?
Exactly, because I've felt that before. I was, you know, before I was aware of the social and emotional intelligence research.
Yeah.
I used to be more afraid that, you know, that my heart would be broken than I am
yeah.
now. I don't feel that fear so much, but it is the fear of when this feeling is going to end.
Or am I going to say something that's going to kill the romance,
yeah.
so to speak, with
yeah.
my asking questions that I really know I need to ask
yeah.
in order to determine if a person is right for me.
Right. Am I going to find out that we're not compatible and I'm going to end this and I like it?
Yeah, right.
That kind of a thing.
Like, do you find yourself going, let me just let the flutter phase draw out a little more, and I can ask that hard question next week, or I can address that question of,
you know,
you know, do our careers mesh
in this relationship
later?
No, in this relationship, there was a point for me at the beginning, like the first maybe month
yeah.
that I was doing that, but then
yeah.
it's like that's a different phase now. Now I'm at the phase where I ask those questions, so that's
there's
also something about just like sort of celebrating the wins in it, because that's
yeah.
that's a big deal for me, that I'm like, I face a lot more conflict in relationships than I used to.
I bet.
It's something I've worked at.
Well, and, you know, being a colleague with you, I can tell the world that you do that not just in your dating relationships. You've worked strategically on becoming way more direct and getting satisfied sooner, and it trickles down into how you handle systems at the office and to,
mm-hmm.
you know, like you're a more satisfied human being because that's your perspective, and you've butted heads with people over things, and you know, like
yeah.
we have better outcomes as a result of it. So, like, I'm delighted to hear you say that about your relationships, because I can see the parallel path and know how that works.
Yeah,
yeah,
I love that. Thank you, Kate.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we're two women having this discussion. I thought I wanted to bring sort of my side of the story in a way that I think may or may not speak to some men who might be listening as well. What I recalled in thinking about today's question about the myth of if I only had a relationship, then I'd be happy, is I've had the feeling, I really should kind of interview some exes on this, but I've identified a pattern of where I've gotten into relationships with men who really weren't happy at the time that I met them. And us meeting and, you know, being in a relationship or them being associated to kind of my world, my network, this training, in whatever order it happened. Some of them encountered, you know, the training and then we developed a, it all happens quickly and overlapping, et cetera. But there has been this phenomenon of like, these were not happy guys before we met. And then I get them in this phase of happy, you know, either relationship rush or feeling that life can be different in some critical way that it wasn't before, or, you know, just through my caring about them going, wait, this is what I see for you, that they're like, you know, different dudes for a month or so. And then, you know, I've had it in a relationship where, like, early on, a month, 6 weeks in, I go to a wedding with him and his coworkers, and his coworkers are like, oh, my God, you're the woman who's changed him so much. He's happy at work now. That should have been kind of a red flag for me. And it wasn't. I mean, it should have been a signal to me that this is not a happy individual. And if I knew then what I know now, or if I'd applied what I kind of knew then, I should have been able to see, like, you know, he's got work to do beyond just having me in his life. And now having identified this, it actually sort of scares me when I hear men say things like, you make me so happy.
Yeah.
I don't want to make you happy. Please, dear God, be happy.
Yeah, at the
be
same
happy
time,
and have me be optional.
like beautiful and healthy and also really funny story.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I want to honor the yearning that's getting met when somebody says, you have made him so happy at work. And it's like, it's, I mean,
oh,
I
that is like,
diminish it. Like, how good does that feel?
Oh, it's completely in the realm of like, wow, that was a really easy win. You know, I get to feel so good if someone's life is like that transformed.
Right, like, I matter. Like,
exactly.
I matter so
that
much.
Is exactly the yearning. Yeah.
I'm just thinking of that. It's like that's a big goodie, you know?
Right.
and it's a big thing, goodie to give up. And I love that you're seeing that it's like it doesn't work out in the long run.
Right.
And there are other ways to meet the yearning to matter. And I know you're after many of those in other contexts. But sometimes like there is this piece of like, I've got to let something go when it's not, you know, I feel that way about the fairy tales we talk about.
Right,
to let something go that I kind of cherish.
Right.
And it's all to good ends, you know, it works out well. But I get something greater, but there is a little bit of a sad loss in it.
Yeah. Well, and it kind of, when that fades, it feels like the original contract of the relationship was broken, where it was like, oh, you were happy. Our agreement was you be happy and I'll be, you know, smart and delightful and, you know, lead you to these happy places. And then once it feels like I can't do that anymore, it's like, what do I offer?
Mm-hmm.
So if that's the dynamic at the beginning, it definitely leads to trouble later on. And I think women are particularly prone to being kind of blinded by those early wins and gains, or kind of like feeling like we're reforming a guy who was maybe a little rough around the edges in some ways, or adding to his life in certain ways. And I think it just gets to, you know, my test of, can I really be with somebody? Is like, is this a person I can learn and grow with? And, you know, are we going to talk about the fact that this happened at the beginning and, like you said, be aware together that it's not always going to feel this way or be this way, and really have the difficult discussions about what yearnings are getting teased up in the relationship and what aren't, and where do we go from here? So happiness is all our jobs.
Yeah, I love it. Teases up like really what's possible in a relationship, you know, when we're willing to challenge our beliefs and challenge our norms and give up the things that we've enjoyed the way they feel sort of at the surface level in the past, we're really opening ourselves up for, you know, this sort of deeper unknown experience that you know, that I'm discovering as in conflict, you know, and when I challenge, you know, my one of my big relationship beliefs that that's not something that, you know, is good or that that's going to be harmful to me in some way, but as I challenge that, that's where I'm getting these new experiences that really change me.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Rachel.
Yeah, thank you, Kate.
And thanks to everyone who was with us today.
Mm-hmm.
We're glad you joined us on Bring Out Your Best Blog Talk Radio. If you'd like more information on our workshops or on our evening events, including networking and education, you can visit us at rightliving.com. If you'd like to ask a question on our show, email hello@rightliving.com, and we will happily hear from you on air. Thanks so much.